KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. It's estimated that in King County, about 700 people under the age of 25 do not have permanent housing. How did it happen? Where do they stay? How do they get by? We're going to find out by talking to three of them. Saul Castro moved out of his parents' house when he was 13. He's now an intern with the Seattle nonprofit group called Youth Care. BZ has been without permanent housing since high school and been homeless in several U.S. cities. And BZ participated in three different panel discussions on queer homelessness. David Buck set out on his own when he was 17, and he's experienced homelessness in Moses Lake and here in Seattle. He now lives at Hope Home of Hope, which is an apartment-style living facility provided by Youth Care. Thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
So I've been listening to the rain compounding down recently in recent days, and that always makes me think about people who have no place at all to go. The three of you don't have permanent housing, but are you having to be out with like no housing whatsoever, either during this recent storm or have you had to do that in the past?
Well, not really, because the reason why I became homeless was because I was undocumented. And so ever since I got caught by ICE or whatever. Mm-hmm. I've been under a roof, so I really don't know what it feels like.
Yeah. How about you, BC? Have you ever had nothing over your head?
Yes. I've spent many nights in a tent with just tarps and pallets underneath me, and it gets very cold, very wet. Right now I live in Nicholsville. Mm-hmm. That's a homeless encampment in Georgetown.
Okay.
And I have a structure, actually, and it's like a shed. It's pretty cool, you know?
How was it during this crazy storm we had lately? Is it okay?
It's been days since I've felt my toes.
Wow. Cold.
Very cold.
I hope dry, at least.
Yes.
Yeah. And how about you, David? Have you ever just been without any kind of housing at all and had to be on the street or camping out?
Yeah, for the 2.5-3 years that I was homeless, particularly here in Seattle. I was here in 2008 when we had a really bad winter, and there was a bridge in Cowan Park that I used to sleep under. It at least kept the snow off me.
Mm-hmm. Was it crowded? I mean, were a lot of people trying to get under that bridge to at least keep that away?
At least at the time I was there, it wasn't very popular because it was pretty cops would frequent the area a lot, so people tend not to go to that bridge because fear of getting busted by the cops, but considering how cold it was, I didn't really care.
David, what led to you becoming homeless?
It's a multitude of things. It's my own personal mistakes. I ended up developing a really bad drug habit, and I was living with a family member of mine who was not very good support. I mean, his intentions were good, but he was pretty cutthroat that I had a pretty strict timeline for when I could get a job. And at the time, the economy wasn't doing so well. And basically, considering the circumstances I was in, it felt like being homeless was a more safer option than living in my current situation. So
yeah, this relative said get a job or you're out, and the pressure made you just decide to get out.
It started becoming he started becoming more demanding.
Yeah.
On me.
Mm-hmm.
Like it had eventually gotten to a point where my relationship with this particular relative I felt was becoming incredibly unhealthy.
Yeah.
And at the time, my drug habit was pretty substantial, and I decided that I would just be better off wandering the streets of Moses Lake than living with him. So I told him one day, hey, I found a way to Seattle, and I found a job there, so I just left. But
yeah,
that was a lie because I spent the next 3 months wandering around Moses Lake.
BC, how about you? What led to you becoming homeless?
My mother passed away from colon cancer in 2008, 2 months before I graduated high school. And after that, many problems ensued after that. Drug problems, religious and political differences between my family and I, and it just seemed like I should just go on the independent route.
And you mentioned that, why did the immigration issues lead to you becoming homeless, Saul?
Well, I had to do certain things to get money, to get by. And so in North Dakota, you have to have papers or be a citizen in order to, you know, be wandering around the streets and stuff like that. I was actually living in Denver, Colorado. And so I was just doing some business in North Dakota. And the reason why all this happened to me was because my mom, she always neglected me. She never really paid attention to me. She always wanted me out of the house. If I didn't have money, I wasn't her kid. And the only time she knew I was around was when I had basically money and paid her bills and stuff, even though she was married. And so I just, at the age of 13, I couldn't take it anymore because my stepdad was always like trying to yeah. fight with me, like literally. And we did get in a few fights, so I just decided to leave. And I found some people. At the time, I felt they were really nice because they said they were my family and that they would take care of me, but, you know.
That didn't turn out that way?
Well, it was good, but it wasn't. I was living independent. I had my own car and everything. So at the age of 15, I had my own car, but I was doing illegal stuff, so.
It was driving one of the things, illegal things at 15?
Well, yeah. I got my first ticket when I was 13, and that was because my stepdad made me drive his car because he was too drunk to drive. Mm. So, yeah, I was in North Dakota doing some business, and a cop stopped me. And it's actually a funny story because I'm a really smart person. Well, I'm a really smart ass. So. And so the cop stopped me and said, oh, we have a Mexican. And so I was like, what is that supposed to mean? And he's like, oh, nothing. Just step out of the vehicle, please, sir. I was like, all right. And they brought dogs and everything. They searched the car. And I was like, you might want to search under the seat. You want me to help you take the seat off? Maybe you want to take the motor off, too. Mm-hmm. And he was like, can you please just step over here and don't speak? I was like, I'm all right. And so the cop was like, I was like, am I free to go? You didn't find anything on me. And he was like, yeah, it's just that I'm just tired of you people coming into my town and infecting my people.
He was just hassling you.
Yeah. So I called him out because he was an Indian and he was, you know, just being racist towards me. So I called him out on that, too. And that's basically when he was like, shut up and get in the back of my car.
Yeah. Not always the best strategy to call out a police officer
yeah.
of any variety. So it sounds like you felt pushed out of your home. You decided that there was something better for you out on the street. But, I mean, at this point, it sounds as though all three of you have tried to figure out a way to find housing of some kind, maybe in some ways come back into the system in some way to try to get it accommodations for yourselves. Was there a point at which you made that decision, BT, when you decided, no, this being out here by myself without connecting with some of the services that are available is just not working for me?
Yeah, I had a time where I was staying under a bridge downtown, and just the people around me and the theft of my belongings, which were like lots of memories, just material possessions, but, you know, I had ties to them and memories that went along with them. I still have my memories, but I don't have my things anymore, including my trumpet. I'm a musician, and I haven't been able to play a trumpet for like 2.5 years now because it's gone. And, you know, it's not worth anything at a pawn shop. It ended up in a dumpster, I know it. And it just really hurt me that people don't care. They don't care to ask for things that they need. They just want to take and take and take, even if it's from someone who doesn't have very much.
Mm-hmm.
So that just, like, was the end of that. And I went straight to Tent City 3, and they ended up sending me to Nicholsville, and I've been there since. And, yeah, I have a few friends there I would call family,
mm-hmm.
and they've just been helping support me emotionally and giving me mad props for all the hard work I do for the community and my peers.
David, how about you? What was the moment at which you realized that under this bridge or wherever, just entirely on your own, was not going to work for you and you needed to make some connection to the community?
Well, it's two parts.
before I moved into the situation where I was like, okay, my life needs to change, I was a traveling type. I mean, I figured I was homeless. I didn't really foresee myself becoming not homeless for a while, so I decided to travel. I used to go around from Rainbow Gathering to Rainbow Gathering. I don't know if you're familiar with what
right.
that is.
They have the giant gatherings usually in state national forests and places.
Yeah, exactly. And I was caught in a situation here in Seattle where my backpack had just been completely demolished. And at the time, I had a case manager named Kevin Daverman, and he basically, I told him I need a new backpack because I need to hit the road because I need to go to the next Rainbow Gathering. And he said, okay, I'll help you get a new backpack, but on one condition. You have to sign up for these wait lists to get into transitional housing. And I was like, all right. I mean, if I just get on the wait list and get the backpack, then,
you didn't think you were really going to move into the transitional house. You just signed on the line. Okay.
Yeah, but so I got the backpack, and several months later, I was traveling back here from the Wyoming Rainbow Gathering in 2009, and I had an incident in Wyoming that just kind of snapped me back to reality in a sense. I was traveling through Wyoming. I had a huge head of dreadlocks with beer bottle caps infused into the dreads, and I looked like, a hippie junkie. And Wyoming didn't like me too much. And I got hurt out there really bad by some people that just didn't like the fact that I was a hippie from out of town. Mm-hmm. So I got really hurt. I got my stuff stolen, and getting from Wyoming to Montana took longer than it ever should have. And I should have listened to my friend when stick to the rails, don't hitchhike.
Yeah.
But I was feeling adventurous. So at that point I was like, I'm never going to travel again. I need to go to Seattle, and I just need to lay low for a little while.
And your name was on this list for transitional housing.
Yeah, the whole time. And so when I finally made it back to Seattle, I just got a random phone call one day from ICE's house saying, hey, we have a spot for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed to line up so well that it felt ridiculous not to take this opportunity.
Did it feel right immediately when you moved into that house, or did it take a while to adjust?
Oh, it took me a year to adjust.
Yeah. What were the hardest things about adjusting to living in that situation?
For me personally, it was sleeping on a bed. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it. I couldn't sleep on a bed. Like, I spent like the first initial like 3 months sleeping in my sleeping bag on the floor because I would sleep on the bed and it would feel... It wouldn't just feel right because I was so used to like sleeping in the woods or sleeping on sidewalks or something like that. And to sleep on a bed, I felt like I had no control because it was so different.
In your travels and in the experiences you've had meeting other people, have you often, when you meet other young people your age and you're talking to them, have you like talked to them about your situation, about the fact that you don't have permanent housing? I'm kind of wondering what kind of reactions you get when you tell your peers that and what kind of questions they have for you. So
Well, some people, they just ask, like, where do you live? And I just tell them. And some people, they're like, oh, well, how did it happen? And they want to hear my story. And I tell them. And some people are heartbroken and stuff. Some people are like, oh, well, that sucks. Yeah.
How about you, BZ? What kind of questions do you get when you're talking to your peers about this, or people who aren't in your situation?
Sometimes they get, you don't look homeless, you don't act homeless. Oh, you have two jobs. How are you homeless? And I'm like, well, I have lots of different beliefs, and one of them is that human rights should trump property rights. And so I have a really big problem with the fact that people pay rent, and that rent is too high and minimum wage is not high enough. And so that just doesn't match up. And it's just really hard for me to understand how someone can feel like they can be happy when they can just barely get by, or there's nothing they can do to pay their bills, or there's, like, no way that they can pay their bills, you know, no matter what they do. And it's just really sad. So, you know, where I live, I don't pay any money rent, and I can, you know, have some nice things here and there, you know?
the number of homeless youth who are lesbian and gay and bisexual is a huge percentage of the overall total. And, you know, we pass same-sex marriage in the state and those marriages take place. And people might think, well, things have gotten a lot better. But in your travels, what's been your perspective on that?
On LGBTQ issues?
And homelessness.
And homelessness?
Yeah.
Yeah, about 40% is the general estimated percentage of homeless youth that are LGBTQ. And it's just it's another thing to identify with that might not be positive, you know, commercialized or in the media and on a political level. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the easiest thing. It's not. We don't choose it. It's just who we are.
Sure.
And that's just how it is.
And it's maybe families or living situations that don't accept that, that it causes a lot of those young people to leave those situations.
Absolutely.
And hit the road, yeah.
The stress of trying to explain your identities to someone who doesn't understand them, or it's not in their vocabulary, or they don't want to acknowledge those identities, that's really tough. And sometimes it's just easier to just escape and mm-hmm. and find some people who you can relate to,
yeah.
Which is sometimes on the street.
You know, you mentioned you have two jobs, and I think a lot of people's stereotype of homeless youth is that they'll be out on the Ave in front of the station here, and they'll be panhandling. Have you ever had to panhandle?
I have.
And
I have. Mm-hmm.
And how did that work for you? Were you good at it?
Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes it's bad. Sometimes you leave in a good mood because you meet some good people who really care and ask questions about your situation and really want to know what you're about and what you're doing. And then sometimes it's bad, you know, you get the comments like, get a job, fucking bums, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just things like that. It could go any which way. Panhandling's not the easiest thing to do, especially if you don't have a skill like music,
right?
Or if you can't sing, or
if you only still had your trumpet.
I know. Definitely.
I mean, what's your advice to people who see young people who are panhandling on the street who are presumably homeless? Like, for example, do you give money to them, BZ?
Sometimes. I mean, I don't have much money to spare.
Sure.
I have my money that I need to live. I don't like to have extra. I don't have a bank account. I don't do that kind of thing. It's just money doesn't mean much to me. So when I have it, I take my friends out to eat, you know, whatever I feel like doing, whatever brings me happiness. And that's really all I care about is my happiness.
Mm-hmm.
I think that should be everyone's goal in life, is to just be happy.
Yes. We just scratched the surface. We could talk for quite a bit longer, but our time is over. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate you guys taking the time talking to some of the people who don't have permanent housing in our area, some of the 700 people under the age of 25. You just heard from BZ, and David Buck was with us, and also Saul Castro from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.